And Linda Moulton Howe with us, of course. And we're going to take conversations with Linda in a moment. And if you're a whistleblower, you've got a story, you can share that too. And welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, great stories you covered today.
Well, thank you. I think that the news is so important on John, and then it extends through the news from Jaime in Mexico City on Kodachrome slides that may actually be of at least one type that was retrieved in a crash. And then the human abduction syndrome continues on around us, and Wade Vernon is an example of somebody who clearly had some sort of an interaction with their blood system. And you just start putting it all together, and it's more and more pieces that are beginning to, form a more clear focus on this whole interaction of other intelligences with this planet.
Something's going on. Have you seen, by the way, that picture of the Cirrus with the light coming out of it?
Yeah, and the NASA is trying to say that those two spots of bright white in that one, what looks like a crater, are ice reflecting. But why wouldn't there be then, why wouldn't we get that kind of reflection of ice from Mars or someplace else?
Exactly.
I mean, it is hugely bright, and it the one crater has the two pieces. I do think that there are other white spots on Ceres.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It really is. It's very puzzling and a true solar system mystery that wouldn't it be something if it's technology in the crater?
Oh, my gosh, that would be from another place. So they've whittled down. Mars One has whittled down 100 people that would go to Mars. They'll cut that down even more. But these folks will be going on a one-way mission, Linda. Would you ever do that?
I think that if I were 18 years old, I would seriously be curious enough to take off for Mars, knowing that it was going to be one way, but that every epoch in human history has been related to people who had curiosity, or they had, in this case, we need perhaps to find a way to make Mars habitable to us because of what we're doing on this planet. I hate to think that humans would end up destroying a lot of the Earth. But nevertheless, I've heard astronauts talk about that we really need to be looking at our solar system with the idea of places where we can extend the human population, because we never know, even if it's not human self-destruction, if it is a big asteroid, then we are vulnerable in a universe that seems both divinely caring but tremendously dangerous all at the same time. And so getting to Mars and maybe getting into the lava tubes and setting up a civilization there is a very intelligent step right now in human evolution.
I wouldn't go, but I'd probably send producer Tom on a one-way mission. Off he would go. Let's take some calls. Sean is in Spokane, Washington, on the wildcard line. Sean, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I appreciate the both of you. You're a living legacy where everybody can come together and share their stories. I think that's very powerful.
Thank you.
And I thank you for this opportunity.
You're very welcome.
Now, when they watch the skies, NASA, and all the government agencies, they're only watching anywhere from 1% to 3% of the skies. What about the other 97%? And they won't accept the other 97%, but yet there's all kinds of things going on. And why wouldn't, that would be like going to somebody's house that you were never at. How would you know about the other 97% when you really only watch 3% of the skies?
Well, in underscoring your point, if you move over into infrared and you are working through the whole spectrum of frequencies that are infrared, it's my understanding that the Department of Defense and the UK MOD really don't want citizens to have access to, we'll call it, really fine infrared instruments, because apparently a lot of the extraterrestrial activity and technology operates in frequencies that we cannot see with the human eye. but that in infrared our government monitors. And it means that the very restriction on our retina in terms of our being able to see only a certain visible light spectrum means that other intelligences that know exactly how we're made and know exactly what it is that we can see in the electromagnetic spectrum can take advantage of the narrowness, and they can operate in frequencies that are invisible to us. So I think there is a tremendous amount that is happening outside of human sight.
We go now to Victor, truck driving in California, west of the Rockies. Good to have you with us, Victor.
Hi, Linda. The 40s, 50s, and 60s, there was an awful lot of nuclear testing. Is there any correlation to the crashes with any of the nuclear testing? And have you ever looked into that?
I understand what you're asking in terms of the crash of the UFO vehicles going back into the 40s onward, and could any of them be related to any testing? It isn't the atomic testing so much, I think, that is linked, as it is the work that we were doing with microwaves. We were experimenting with very, very intense radar in the 1940s. And there have been some documents and certainly people who have talked. One was, this was White Sands, it was the Naval Research Lab. It was Andy Kistner. He had been in the political world of Las Cruces, and he had talked with the Naval Research Lab guy about the fact that our radar, when we were experimenting with radar and triangulating radar, that our government stumbled upon it, I guess you would say, the fact that concentrated microwave radiation could interfere with the propulsion system of these mysterious unidentified disks. So that meant that our government then began trying to see if they could use microwave radar in varying frequencies as a weapon to aggressively try to bring down whatever these vehicles were. Now, on the other side, it is very probable that in a lot of cases that the disks that we brought down were, if you want to use the word piloted, they were not piloted always by biological entities, that there were a lot of androids that fall into the category of something that was created, cloned, hybridized, and not entirely biological. And so today we hear about and see drones all of the time. Those would have been the equivalent of extraterrestrial drones doing work on this planet. And eventually I think that the government began to understand that there were all kinds of layers of intelligences, and that there were worker bees and worker drones and all sorts of things that aiming our microwave radar in both experimentation of intensity to see if we could bring down technology that we definitely wanted to get and back engineer was part of what was being covered up intensely in the 40s, the 50s, and extends to this day. So the link between microwaves is much stronger. The atomic testing, remember, was only done at White Sands before we dropped the bombs on Japan.
Thanks, Linda, for that. Let's go next to John in Ontario, Canada, International Line. John, you're on with Linda on Coast to Coast.
Good evening. Nice to talk to both of you.
You too.
It's something like the fellow that called earlier, since he was young and being standing in front of the window and that. I've had stuff like that going on as far back as I can remember. One incident, I was sitting at my parents' house. They lived about 150 miles north of Toronto in a rural area. And a lot of the first ones, I couldn't understand it, but all of a sudden everybody would stop all around me. And yet I could see this ball of light. And I tried to tell my dad, remember, my dad was sitting right beside me on the couch, so the night I saw one of them.
So everybody went into suspended animation around you?
Yeah, it just stopped. My mother was ready to put a pot on the stove, like she's getting ready, like it was winter. So.
And she just like froze right there?
Yeah.
That's she, exactly.
She just all of a sudden she's holding the pot. Because I'm trying to say, tell them that this thing's outside the window because they owned the property next door too. And it came right through the window, went through a light bulb, came over to me, but while it was still outside, that's when they stopped. And like, that's one incident. But after that, I didn't remember, anything once it left. And I woke up in the morning, and it was a couple of years later that I started hearing about people with these triangles, red triangles marked on their, around their belly button.
Right, exactly.
And that's what I had. And to the, I'm 61 now, and it's still whatever it is. Like, the mark's gone, but it's just itchy like crazy. To this
now,
day.
The branding syndrome, it, some people call it, what does it mean, and why are some of the red marks put on people the triangles, others are circles that are divided into rings, there's a variety of them. But I'm so interested in what you're describing, that you yourself could act, could consciously see that your family around you was in suspended animation, because that is exactly the way Betty Andreessen begins her story, that she and her parents and the house, I think, had half a dozen people in it, and they were cooking dinner, when all of a sudden, Betty sees that her whole family just stopped. Whatever anybody is doing, they are just in suspended animation.
How bizarre.
Yeah, and it's and then coming through the door, it literally, they came through the wood of the door. This is something that is described so often in the ET phenomena. Only instead of one being, it looked like an entire, gosh, it would be like if you had 20 of you very close to each other coming through a door. And she was is a very good illustrator, and she has drawn this in her books, or this, how this all began. And that's when Betty is taken physically also with these happen to be the gray android types, and they took her then out of the house into this extraordinary abduction sequence that is in two books, The Andreessen Affair, and then later two books, The Watchers. And she is such a good illustrator. The books are full of seeing through her mind's eye. And that ability to suspend animation, I personally think, relates directly to time, the manipulation of time, that if we understood the relationship of energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, that's Einstein's famous E equals MC squared, that there is something about the technology, the moving through what we would call space-time in the matter worlds, that has a consequence on time, and that we're dealing with beings that know how to control it, and that somehow a field is applied, and that the people who are in suspended animation are like in one time phase, and Betty Andreessen and the grays that came for her were in another time phase.
You know, the suspended animation reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode where a guy had a stopwatch, and every time he stopped it, everybody stopped. That's got to be unbelievable to witness, Linda.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
It, absolutely. And it haunts people for all of their lives. But Betty Andreessen became so mature in the evolution of her experiences that for her, I think that her contribution, when you read all of the books that have been written about her, there are six and I have all six, and have talked with her at great length, her rock in her life through all these extraordinary experiences has been that sense that she has that there really is a divine field that has care and concern about the evolution of Earth, well, the evolution of life, and that we just are still in such a baby state in relationship to the universe that we don't perceive the big picture. And there are a few people like Betty Andreessen who have been through this a lot, and it's of great value to read what it is that they've experienced and have come out the other side with a deeper conviction that there is some powerful force that is working through all of this toward some evolution that in the end it is not scary, that we are in something that actually is quite exciting.
Sean's in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show. Sean, go ahead.
How are you guys doing this evening?
Good, Sean. Thank you.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm really happy to hear that. Yeah, I heard you guys speaking earlier about Mars and about the volunteers that are going to be selected, the few, the many, the proud, to go down there to the red planet. I know, if I am correct, Mars is the second from the sun?
No.
Mars? No.
No, Mercury is first.
Then Venus.
Venus is second. Earth is third.
We're the third rock.
Mars is fourth.
Okay, so going out away from the sun, would time, how we count time, would time go slower or faster, and would that make them age faster or age less?
No, the relationship of time is to velocity. And as you approach the speed of light, mass becomes infinite and time stops. If you are down at 60 miles an hour in a car, you're not going to make a dent, right? But depending upon the velocity between of whatever propulsion system we're using to go from the Earth to Mars, then you would reach a point, perhaps, depending upon the speed, where you might affect time a little bit. But you're really not getting into the really slowing down, like an interstellar, where the astronaut remains in his 30s and his family ages and dies while he's off. That's because of they were using the black holes to accelerate and to move to other parts of the in the Milky Way galaxy. So that's where you get the huge time shifts or distortions, not just being in what we'll call the normal 9 months to get to Mars.
We're coming back with final questions with Linda in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Friday night into Saturday morning, open lines, just about anything will happen. We're going to come back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe and take your final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, what are the possibilities that the 1947 Kodachrome slides could be faked? Is that possible?
Well, as I understand it, Tom Carey and Don Schmidt went to the historian at Kodak in Rochester. I think they had the physical slides and let them examine, and they said that there was no possibility that there could have been any kind of hoaxing with those slides at that time in 1947 to 49.
Well, that's pretty dramatic all by itself then, isn't it?
Yeah, and the fact that two of these slides were in 400 and some that had photographs that were related to the very specific time of around 47 to 49 of actors and politicians, and that this woman that she might be or have worked for intelligence sets up this possibility that she had friends in high places and did work for friends in high places, and it might explain that she might have even done this photography because she was being consulted or was working on something related to the extraterrestrial problem. We will probably never know that, but there certainly are ingredients in this around the time frame of 47, and that Hilda Blair Ray and her husband were at the right place at the right time with the right kind of work to have perhaps interfaced with people that might have been working in intel on the ET challenge.
So of all the stories you've covered in your career, cattle mutilations, crop formations, ET stories, loud booms, which is the strangest for you?
Well, each of the categories that you've listed,
they're all strange.
Popped in my head as being the highest strangeness in mutilations, the highest strangeness in crop formations, the highest strangeness in the human abductions, the highest strangeness in geophysical effects, such as the bizarre booms. And so we're dealing with Earth mysteries that, if you said the big box is phenomena, each of them has some of the highest strangeness pieces. If all of them are being caused by something going on in extraterrestrial interactions with the planet, then the extraterrestrials would be the ultimate cause, but none of us know that for sure. We know that there are different types of non-humans that are described by people in the human abduction syndrome and even in the government. But when it comes to each of the phenomena and the high, high strangeness that occurs in each of these, it's hard to say that one specific high strangeness is really above all others. But I have said on this program before that I think of all of the complexities that of all the cases that RAF Bentwaters, Woodbridge, encompasses so many people in a military setting with beams, with lights, with what appears to be possible time changes, what the effects on the humans, the government cover-up, it really has it all. And in fact, in this upcoming Eureka Springs conference in the Ozark Inn, it's April 10th to 12th, I'm going to be doing Bentwaters' more revelations, and I have some really astounding information coming from somebody who lived there that adds yet another layer to how complex it all has been and is. And I think on the other side of your question, George, is also this whole issue that if time itself ends up being part of the manipulation, the time and space is a fabric that can be changed, altered, and moved by phenomena that know what they are doing, then we humans, looking back at our strange history and looking back at things like the machine that was found that seemed to be like a complex Greek, the Etikythera, I think it's called, that is so out of its timeline that nothing like that should have existed. How much of our own Earth, if we understood it, shows us that timelines have been manipulated on this planet and in this solar system?
Well, that's a good point. Let's go to Mike in Norfolk, Virginia, Wildcard Line. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, guys, how you doing tonight?
Good, Mike.
I was wondering, the more I'm hearing about the Bentwaters case and the physical damage this man occurred from the his encounter,
right.
Have you ever thought of dovetailing the Cash Landrum case along with this?
Well, Cash Landrum occurred on the 29th of December. The three-night event in Bentwaters was 26th after midnight, the 27th after midnight, the 28th after midnight till sunup. And then Cash Landrum was, I believe, 9 o'clock in the evening, something like that, on the 29th. And what is confusing about Cash Landrum, the shape of the huge craft was diamond shape, and that definitely fits into a category of a very specific kind of diamond shaped craft that goes with one of the, we'll call them extraterrestrial biological types. But the very fact that the two women and the young boy in the car who witnessed all of this up close, and unfortunately because they were exposed to radiation coming from this big diamond, and they ended up with microwave damage on their skin and eventually the cancer and all kinds of issues. But they were close enough, the one who got out of the car could see, even count, that there were, I believe it was 21 or 23, what appeared to be military helicopters that were flying in tandem with this huge diamond-shaped glowing object. So was it an exercise in which our government was trying to see if we could perhaps collaborate with ETs on flying this machine, or there were extraterrestrials flying the machine and the military helicopters were there to monitor? No one seems to know exactly anything. I don't know if there's been any successful whistleblower who had a big picture of what occurred. But the fact that you had Rendlesham Forest for 72 hours with the focus of as much phenomena as there was in England, and then on the 29th of December, there was that close-up encounter, diamond-shaped, in the Texas area, makes you wonder if there was something going on that was linked between all of those events by an intelligence not human that was doing something on the planet that related to perhaps what the UK and Americans were doing, perhaps even underground, perhaps experimenting with various kinds of frequencies in England and maybe in Texas that provoke something. These are the areas that we all would like to have more answers, because we know, starting with the microwave experimentation and radar in deliberately trying to bring down these craft in the skies in the 40s and the 50s, that our government and the UK government and the allies of World War II have definitely wanted technology that they could try to back engineer, that there's been aggression, and has there been pushback by the extraterrestrials? Question mark.
Okay, Linda, we're going to take some final calls here now. They're still lining up for you. Helen is in Antioch, California. Helen, you're on with Linda, and you're now on the air. Hi, Helen.
Hello, good evening. Linda Moltenhout, George Murray. It's a pleasure to speak with both of you, my Coast to Coast and Files listeners. I have been, I guess, a continuous abductee since probably birth, and my mother as well, and since in Oakley, California as well. So a spaceship landed. My mom tried to wake her family to no avail, and she said her and her brothers were floated out of their house, and she barely remembers it, and I remember having experiences like that, just as a slight glimpse in my older years.
Yeah.
Now I have several cancers and precancers, and right now I have no medical. I have a mitral valve prolapse, and I don't feel well most of the time, but I do know it has to do with blood, our blood plasma, and form elements. Our body is made of about 8%. Blood total body weight, and I do know that space-time travel, you do have to change your total matrix. Otherwise, you will have, I guess, a death experience or be destroyed, or I guess it wouldn't be very good. So they are mixing blood, somehow, because my blood has changed over time. I've noticed the color changing and so forth.
I wonder if they're doing the grand test, Linda. What do you think?
Well, I think it's all part of continual genetic manipulation and the creation of different, let's say, versions of standing up primates. And the question that probably is not comfortable for anybody to contemplate, but I think that you have to, is that if it is true, as documents have stated, that extraterrestrial biological entities have been interacting with this planet for millions of years, and that they are responsible for manipulating genes in already evolving primates to create various models of Homo sapiens sapien, you have to look at the Neanderthals and say they did not know that they were being replaced by Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien. But then we are here, they phased out. What if the hybridization program that keeps going on, whether humans know about it, whether the governments like it, it's ongoing? And what if the next step on Earth is a complete replacement of Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien through slow evolutionary hybridization of the, we'll call it the current standing up primate species, and that eventually, if we knew the whole big picture, Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien will be replaced by yet another model? And if the picture is, if that is the truth in the big scheme of things in the universe, we contributed on an evolutionary scale to developments and art and all kinds of things that Homo sapiens sapien has put into this planet, but there is no guarantee that our lives will continue in this current form. And I think once we as a human family could be able to talk about all of this out front in public with each other, it isn't really, to me, it doesn't fall into the category of fear. It falls into the category that something quite fascinating could be happening, and the governments themselves may be taking some sort of a secret war stand against any indications that hybridization would be moving toward replacing Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien. That might be at the heart of the alleged secret war. Well, if there is even conflict, that means that our government in the UK must perceive something out there as an ally. And if we have an ally, then I think that we are moving into this century where eventually it all has to be introduced to us one way or the other, because I don't believe they could continue to have an Earth secret war with competing extraterrestrial, geopolitical, territorial intelligences without us humans finally waking up to it for real. And in the end, it may be that if this conflict is about what is allowable to do with life, and that cloning and hybridization are part of the what is being fought about, the end game of it all could end up on the side of human survival moving out into the solar system, and that when Jim Peniston, going back to R.A.F. Bentwaters, had the impression when he touched that black, glassy, triangular craft in Rendlesham Forest and got the binary download in his mind of zeros and ones, he came away with a residue that the intelligence behind this black glassy craft in the forest that came with a huge blast of light, perhaps that was part of the time travel, that they were time travelers from a very distant 50,000 years in the future where
maybe
they were having problems surviving, and that if it is us in the future and that we come back trying to get Band-Aids and genetic material, it means, George, that at least humans got 50,000 years into the future.
Which is not a bad run.
Right.
Let's take one more quick call. Greenport, New York. Bob's with us. Bob, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, George.
Hi.
Good morning, Linda.
Hi.
Linda, can you hear me?
Yes.
Your intelligence is overwhelming.
True.
Yes. Please refresh my memory. The two slide numbers of the Roswell visitors.
That Jaime has in Mexico City?
Yeah.
Yes, please. With what numbers?
9 and 11 and 10 is missing.
Thank you very much. And what was the worst catastrophe to hit America in this century?
9/11.
Thank you. I will probably get in trouble for saying this, and I'm actually shaking right now, but on 9/11, 2020, we better get off this marble.
All right. That's an interesting take there. You're going to have to call in during our predictions night on New Year's Eve. Linda, thanks for being on the program.
Well, this is, as always, I enjoy it very much and hope that all of the people listening will get in touch with me if they have any reports of high strangeness or environmental issues to earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
And get a hold of Lisa for that May 5th event, okay? For Dan Galante, Tom Van Heiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.